get all the commissioners together?
Seats, we'll go ahead and call this meeting to order. What's that?
Your bookends are coming.
Hey. Where is she? Hey. All right, we'd like to call this meeting to order of the Native American Heritage Commission today. It's Friday, July 20th, 2018. At this time, we'd welcome everybody to the Native American Heritage Commission. As a reminder, these mics are very hot, so the button to turn them off and on right here. And so when commissioners are talking, making sure that you could be picked up on some of the audio. All right. At this time, we'll establish roll call to establish a quorum. Go ahead.
James Ramos.
Here.
Laura Miranda.
Present.
Mary Lopez Kiefer.
Here.
Here. Reginald Pagling.
Present.
Bill Mungary.
I'm here.
Oh. That was confusing. Julie Tumamite Stensley.
Present.
Marshall McKay. Russell Atterbury.
Here.
And Joseph Myers.
Here.
Great, thank you.
We have a quorum?
Yes.
Thank you. Moving on the agenda, introductions of commissioners, starting over with Commissioner Myers.
I'm Joe Myers. I'm the executive director of the National Indian Justice Center.
Okay. Turn on the mic.
Can you hear me now? No?
Good.
And we're headquartered over in Santa Rosa, and we do a lot of work in Indian country, and that's good enough, I think.
Ayuki Hootkich, hello, how are you? Yapa Mahi, good morning. Buster Atterbury, I'm the Karuk Tribal Chairman, also a the Pacific Region representative for TBIC, which is a tribal Department of Interior budget meetings. And we just had our recent meeting in Minnesota with the federal government, and we want to put a lot more emphasis on the regions, which all of California is the Pacific region, so hopefully all the tribes will be hearing for us about the changes in the budget formulation. We have a new person, Raina Thayil, who's working on the budget formulation, and she's been fantastic. And we also hope to be working on the IHS possibility of getting more funding to California tribes. Right now, it's just barely 6% funding for California tribes, which is not equitable funding, so we'll be working on that. So welcome, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you.
Aku, Uptmai Pishke Ep, Tauchak, Akinash. Hello, welcome, and thank you. Appreciate you all coming here. Prior to coming here, I was just thinking about some of the things we do with the Heritage Commission, and I think I was talking to some staff members, and I wanted to share with you. We're a Heritage Commission, and every time we get an opportunity to share something about heritage, and we can welcome the people and we want to share it, I encourage tribes to do that. For myself, and speaking on this issue alone, and I'd like to invite you to our crossing. We cross over the channel down in Santa Barbara, September 8th of this year. Our paddle is approximately 19 miles straight, about 24 miles with current. We leave at 2 a.m. in the morning, and people usually catch some of the shuttle boats that go across, leaving at 8 a.m., and they'll catch us out in the middle of the channel, close to the islands. Significant for us because we pool for everybody that can't pool, and it's a cultural opportunity for different people to come and experience different cultures. So as part of that, I'd like to encourage other tribes to, if they have public sessions that they want to share their culture, to please do that. And I think the Heritage Commission is one of those places that would like to do that. Thank you. Akinash.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Mary Lopez Kiefer. I am Luceno and a member of the San Luis Rey Band of Mission Indians. For the tribe, I act as their chief legal counsel. And I am happy to be here this morning representing the commission, and I'd like to give everyone a warm welcome. We have a lot of you in our audience today, so thank you all for making time in your day and coming to share with us the information you wish to share. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Hamana Napuya, Mithu, and James Ramos, Serrano Cuya, Chairman of the Heritage Commission. Just want to thank you and welcome everybody here. The main premise of the commission is to protect our ancestors throughout the whole state of California, and a lot of those issues come up before our agenda, and together as a body, we decide and look at the issues that come before us. So thank you.
Does red mean it's on?
Red means stop, green means go. No, red means go.
Red means go.
There.
The red man says stop.
Yeah.
good morning. Mio, my name is Laura Miranda. I'm a member of the Pechanga tribe in Southern California. I'm also a tribal attorney that specializes in cultural resources protection of our ancestors. Been practicing for 20 years. It's an honor to serve on this commission and do this important work. For our present people and for our future people, our children, and also in remembrance of our ancestors. So I really thank you for allowing me to serve and looking for your guidance as well. We really function best when we all work together and find solutions together. So thank you so much, and thank you for being here today.
Haku. I hope you're doing well today. Hello. My name is Julie Tumamayet Stensley. I'm the tribal chair of the Barbareño Ventadeño Band of Mission Indians based in Ventura County. I'm glad to be here today, and I'm going to be listening to you, and glad to be and honored to be here to help support you in all your needs and the needs for our communities and our land. So thank you for coming to us. We'll do our best. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Christina Snyder. I am the Executive Secretary of the Native American Heritage Commission, and I'm a member of the Dry Creek Rancheria Band of Pomo Indians. I'm Milicana and Macamo descent, which is Dry Creek and Cloverdale Pomo. And I'm proud to be here and honored to be able to learn from some of the best names in the field and who are doing some really good things in Indian country. Thank you.
Terry Robinson, General Counsel.
Do we want to go through the other staff or is, yeah. So go ahead, keep going. All right, from the Attorney General's office.
John Applebaum, Deputy Attorney General.
Thank you. That concludes introductions of Commissioner Staff and Attorney General's representative. We'll be going to closed session. The items are listed: City of San Clemente, Foothill Eastern Transportation, the Reserve Maintenance Corporation, Foothill Eastern Transportation, Johnny Thomas Rosas, UC Davis, and Public Employee Performance Evaluation. I do have two speaker slips on closed session items. Let me make sure that that's where you wanted to speak. I have one, Alex Watts Tobin. Did you want to speak on the closed session item? You have UIAC and UC Davis, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. I have another closed session item speaker, UC Davis, UIAC, Sheila Oroki. Thank you. Is there any others that would wish to speak to any closed session items that I didn't read their name? Yeah, we some of them just said CalNAGPRA requests, so we didn't know. Which names wanted to speak to closed session?
Brian Booth and Courtney Coyle, United Auburn Indian Community.
All right, so those are for the closed session, not for the open session. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, thank you. We have four speakers for on closed session item. Looks like they're all for UC Davis. Is that correct? Thank you. Any others? They want to speak to any closed session items? Hearing none, we'll go ahead and move forward. We'll have Courtney Coyle go ahead and go first.
Is it possible for Davis to respond? Because they requested it first.
Counsel, does it matter which way we take it?
No, it doesn't.
All right. Go ahead, Courtney.
Okay. Thank you. I intended to go last, but I will go first. Good morning, everybody. Yesterday, late afternoon, we received a letter through the commission from Davis, and we're still trying to process everything that was in that letter we just got, and we don't want to appear that we can never be satisfied, because I think that we can, but there are some concerns we have that are in that letter, and we do have a request that we would like to ask of the commission. So can I briefly mention some of our concerns? First, is that
is
the letter?
Is this the July 19th letter?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. UCSD letter says for the first time that they intend to transfer the entirety of the collection under the control of Davis to United Auburn. That's the first time that we've heard that. However, we do not know what Bureau of Reclamation might try and withhold from that collection, what the Davis Museum might try and pull out, or the Department of Anthropology chair. So it's unclear what that means to Davis when they say the entirety of the collection. Second, in a prior letter from Davis, they said that they believe that complying with National NAGPRA is the same as complying with California NAGPRA. We don't think that that's the case. And including the definition of burial site under 8012B, which in CalNAGPRA uses the terms of location and human remains, not an individual burial or a specific individual. Very important when it comes to the practices of the Auburn people with their burial places. And this gets to the sufficiency of the inventory that was just sent to the commission to be posted. Number two, the concept of association under 801133 uses the totality of the circumstances and characteristics, I haven't slept a whole lot, and reasonable belief to be a human remain and associated funerary object. It does not use an archaeological or academic definition. Perhaps most importantly, though, is 8013C, which anticipates that the California NAGPRA in inventories and summaries may include items not required to be included under federal NAGPRA. And that's kind of where we are with the thousands of objects that Davis has kept off of the inventory that they've sent to you. So we think that those are differences and that it's not the same process. Having said that, Davis also says now that they're willing to deaccession thousands of these items, and we think that the process under CalNAGPRA should be followed through in spite of that, and it does not rely on a voluntary action by a university. It does not rely on an inventory that excluded much of the collection and did not accept the identifications of cultural items by Auburn. And it also shows a level of respect for tribal expertise that doing a deaccessioning process doesn't do. There's also future collections at issue, the Brazil site, That's also a collection that's affiliated with us, that they're trying to use the same offensive process of identification and overhandling of it. And the last paragraph of the letter that they sent to you yesterday said, as required by NAGPRA. So that tells us that Davis still doesn't understand that they are exercising discretion on how they are overhandling these collections to get to an inventory. So we also wanted to say that we might want the Brazil collection to also be moving forward now, since they sent that inventory in that big document set that they sent to you. So that inventory may also be ready to be posted. And finally, there was mediation offer out there that we think might have helped to aerate these issues and to have us have these conversations, not in a public forum, but in a private forum. But Davis declined the offer of the commission to mediate this. So here we are again in a public setting having to aerate this, which is not our first choice. So moving on to our request, since you're moving into closed session, we request that the commission post the notice of completion of the inventory for the Auburn Dam collection as well as the Brazil site. And number two, that the commission move forward with dispute resolution of Auburn's claim, including the sufficiency of the inventories that you've received under CalNAGPRA for both the Auburn Dam and the Brazil site. And we do intend to provide additional kinds of detail on an update from the last hearing under the old business agenda item one when we get there. We just didn't know what the university was going to present beyond their letter. There are issues with the letter that we still have, and we are concerned about CalNAGPRA process not being followed if this other process gets followed, and not just for this collection, but for all collections and how things are being done here in California. So with that, I know we've taken the indulgence of your time, and we're here to answer any questions you might have, and we will be staying through the old business item.
Thank you. This is a closed session item, so we're hearing public comment, and it's not really having discussion with the commission at this time on that.
Chairman, just may I make a point of order? Because the documents that the commission may rely on need to be publicly available, there's a copy of the UC Davis letter that's outside, as well as a letter submitted by Wilton Rentria. Thanks.
Thank you. Next speaker is Brian Guth.
Thank you, Chairman Ramos and commissioners. I don't have much to add. Courtney summarized it really well. It's a little confusing if you go through the letter. There are now, I think, three or four separate processes that are happening kind of simultaneously. One is the NAGPRA process. One is the CalNAGPRA process that you guys initiated very recently. One was an internal dispute resolution process that UC Davis undertook since your last meeting. And then the fourth one is the recommendation that was in the letter we've been discussing, which is a deaccession process. So each of them operates a little differently. I think the point of our comments at this point are simply that we don't think any of those other processes resolve all our concerns, and so we would ask that you continue moving forward with the CalNAGPRA process.
Thank you. Next speaker, Alex Watts Tobin.
In the circumstances, I would like to request that I move my comments to the open session, old business, agenda item one.
Okay, so you want to actually go under old business in open session?
In open session, that's correct.
What is it?
Number one.
Number one?
Item number one.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next speaker, Sheila Oroki.
I want to thank you for the opportunity to appear before the commission on behalf of UC Davis, and particularly for the opportunity to speak before your closed session. I am appearing here not as campus counsel, but in my role as special assistant representing the provost and executive vice chancellor, Ralph Hexter, who is responsible for NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA implementation at Davis. We came here today understanding that UAIC wanted to present their views on recommendations made by a faculty ad hoc committee of our NAGPRA advisory committee that was convened as a dispute resolution process in an attempt to try to address this ongoing dialogue. I'm here to explain our understandings of our obligations to comply with NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA, and also our intention to implement the ad hoc committee's recommendation to voluntarily return claimed items within UC Davis control that fall outside the definitions of NAGPRA jurisdiction. To begin, we want to first acknowledge that what might be a straightforward or seem straightforward in terms of what's required by law is occurring in the context of a painful historic exploitation and disregard. We acknowledge that Native American human remains and sacred objects were removed from their final resting places without the informed consent of the descendants of those communities. We recognize that the relationship between the University of California and many tribes is fraught because of those actions. It's extraordinarily challenging to develop an equitable process and clear communication in the context of this injustice. We want to extend our sincere apology for these injustices and express our commitment to repatriate the remains of the ancestors and cultural items. Toward that end, we have elevated NAGPRA responsibility to the Office of the Provost. We have reorganized the governance of our anthropology museum. We have reconstituted our NAGPRA advisory committee. We have appointed a faculty member from our Native American studies who works closely with California tribes as our representative to the University of California system-wide committee. And we have hired expert staff to facilitate NAGPRA compliance. We also want to acknowledge that national NAGPRA reflects a compromise between disparate value systems deeply held by each side. To the extent that our compliance with our understanding of the requirements of NAGPRA have continued to offend, we are deeply sorry. While we could not claim to understand the depth of the grief expressed by UAIC, we offer our good faith commitment to avoid the inevitable delays associated with prolonging this dispute and proceed with a combination of repatriation under NAGPRA and a voluntary return through a deaccession process of the remaining items so that California's tribal ancestors may continue their journey. As a brief background, Accession 32 was excavated in the 1960s and 70s as part of a Bureau of Reclamation project. There were complex and virtually unresolvable questions of responsibility, and UC Davis teamed up with the Bureau to go forward with the NAGPRA process so as not to delay the repatriation because of some of the confusion around responsibility for the land. As required by NAGPRA and consistent with CalNAGPRA, we believe we completed our inventory in consultation with multiple tribes, including UAIC, so that the repatriation could proceed. We jointly concluded with the Bureau of Reclamation that 1,000 items meet the NAGPRA definitions for associated funerary objects. There's been an ongoing dispute with UAIC with regard to approximately 6,000 items that we feel do not meet the federal NAGPRA definitions. Our ad hoc committee reached an agreement on a resolution that they hoped would facilitate the transfer of these items and also seek to repair relations between UC Davis and California tribes. The committee recommended that the campus proceed with the NAGPRA inventory and repatriation process And now that process is complete, and we have just gotten approval from the Office of the President of the UC to go ahead and send the March 9th, 2018 inventory to National NAGPRA. We just got this yesterday. The committee also recommended that the campus proceed to deaccession, consistent with UC policies and in cooperation with BOR, the remaining claimed items. In addition, the ad hoc committee recommended that the campus consider a number of initiatives to address the larger social and historical issues involving Native American tribes and the University of California. We would like to seek to improve the university's relationships with California tribes. These initiatives include recommendations related to the recruitment and retention of Native American students, engagement with tribal governments, and additional curricula related to NAGPRA, indigenous archaeology, and other issues of importance. The recommendation of the ad hoc committee addresses the current status of Accession 32. We worked diligently in consultation with UAIC to treat the items with the utmost respect and handle only as minimally necessary to meet the requirements of NAGPRA. The inventory is complete, and it is our highest goal to avoid further delay and return the items that are under our control. We fear that any other course of action will lead to continued controversy and possibly even lengthy litigation that would further delay the return of these and of the human remains of your ancestors and their belongings. The University of California is bound by federal NAGPRA. Our regents would litigate to defend our legal counsel's interpretation of compliance with those laws. We don't want to be in litigation that will last many years. Regardless of the outcome, we feel that this would be an unconscionable delay. Our proposal to proceed with the steps for both repatriation and deaccessioning is our hope that we can work together and achieve the goal of allowing the ancestors to continue their journey. In closing, I want to once more acknowledge the extreme pain expressed by the extreme pain with regard to the disruption of the sites of the ancestors' graves. While UC Davis cannot change the tragedies of the past or the inadequacies of federal law, we want to offer our sincere apology for the disruption of traditional religious practices and sacred ceremonies and the extended suffering caused by the inventory process required by NAGPRA. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I will be around for the open session as well if further information is
Thank you required. For that. I think there's a clarification.
Yeah, ma'am, I just have one clarification because I didn't see it in any of the materials. Who exactly is on this ad hoc committee? Who are the names of these people and what are their positions?
Beth Rose Middleton. She is the Yochidahi Endowed Professor in the Department of Native American Studies. And Yomar Erkins, who is in our Department of Anthropology.
Two
professors, both of whom serve on the advisory.
That's all that the ad hoc committee is comprised of, is two people.
Correct.
Thank you.
Chairman,
thank you for your comment.
Yeah. If I may be indulged for a moment, I have a lot of questions. First, I just want to clarify, you're here in your capacity as special assistant to
as
the provost.
Representing the provost.
So
I'm not here as legal counsel. I'm not here prepared to make legal arguments.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of legal questions. I don't know if you can answer them or not.
We will be very happy to engage in continued discussion of the questions. Eleanor Reedy, who is the attorney in the UC Office of the General Counsel who handles these items, will be back, I believe, on Monday, and we are absolutely interested in continuing dialogue.
But the questions that I have may have some bearing on whatever action the commission will take. So I'd like to ask them. If you can't answer them, that's fine. One, what does UC Davis intend by deaccessioning?
our intent, I mean, again, as I, my fear is that if we included all 7,000 items in a NAGPRA inventory, that it may not get through the levels of review internally and possibly even at National NAGPRA. And we also, I'm concerned that there may be litigation. As you know, our faculty are free as private citizens to file a lawsuit around NAGPRA issues. And it is, this was a compromise. There was an agreement between a Native American Studies faculty member who deeply in her heart supports the return of these items, and an archaeology faculty member who deeply in his heart believes in science. Both of them were able to come away from their polarized positions and understand that this is a way
forward. Can you just answer her question?
All right.
Really straightforward. Just answer her questions. Thank you.
Council, the questions that we're asking, we're going to be going in closed session, so we just want to make sure we're not crossing any legal channels on those.
No, these are really important questions that we haven't had answered. Because we just, we saw the recommendation of deaccessioning, but we didn't see the final decision until yesterday at 4:30 in the letter that we received from the provost. And the problem, from my perspective, is that the deaccessioned items, it's not clear what they've been identified to be. It's not clear to whom they will go. It's not clear what level of involvement tribes will have in that process, but it does state that BOR will be involved in accordance with policies that we don't know what they are. And so I'd like to know more about what the deaccessioning process entails, because it has an effect on this commission's ability to exercise its jurisdiction.
So we intend to consult with tribes that are interested in these items on the deaccession process. We must necessarily deal with the Bureau of Reclamation. They have indicated to us a commitment to identify those items that are clearly under their responsibility and accede the remaining items to UC Davis, so that for those items, tribes could deal directly with the Bureau of Reclamation for the things that they determine. We don't have control over that. I don't think it's extensive, but we don't know that yet. And the things that they essentially surrender control to UC Davis will be involved in the deaccession. That's my understanding.
And how do you decide which entity has control over what?
The Bureau of Reclamation has the authority to assert control over some of these items, and we need to defer to that authority.
Under what legal authority? Is that what you mean when you say teamed up with BOR, ma'am?
We have cooperated.
Like, what does that mean? And what are the
legalities?
There are
49 sites. There was confusion about responsibility for some of these sites as to whether it was Bureau of Reclamation land, whether it was privately owned. The University of California operated under a contract with the Bureau of Reclamation. So we, because, again, rather than delay the process, a decision was made several years ago to proceed jointly with the NAGPRA process. Now that we're farther along, the Bureau is willing to cooperate with our interest in deaccessioning. But we need to wait for them to tell us which items are clearly under their jurisdiction.
So that hasn't happened?
That has not happened. They have indicated.
So what do you mean when you say you teamed up with BOR?
I meant several years ago we cooperated with BOR to proceed with the NAGPRA process in order to get the repatriation process started without delay.
Sounds like there's been a lot of delay.
There has been a lot of delay.
I still have a couple of questions.
Do you still have some more questions?
I do. So you're basically saying that there are some items for which BOR has exclusive jurisdiction without regard to what CalNAGPRA says with respect to control and possession of an item, which does not have anything to do with where the item was found.
But that is my understanding, and I can't speak for the Bureau. I mean, that is just my understanding.
But you can speak for Davis.
Of the conversations we have had with the Bureau.
Because the definition under CalNAGPRA with respect to control and possession is not as narrow as, and so it's possible, conceded, or possibly, that this commission's jurisdiction might, in fact, overlap. Because under the definitions under CalNAGPRA, and mind you, CalNAGPRA adopts all of the definitions in NAGPRA except as provided. And there are specific definitions with respect to possession and control. And if something is considered to be in possession and control and its provenance can be traced to a California tribe, it comes under the jurisdiction of CalNAGPRA. And since you filed an inventory and a summary, it's almost conceded that it is within your inventory, within your possession and control. So I think we're going to have some problems here, but that's not my big issue. My big issue is, what is the impetus for such a abrupt decision to deaccession, and would the university consider delaying that for it to allow for the possibility of the processes of this commission to go forward? Because the deaccessioning might not have identified items because of the definitions under federal NAGPRA differing from definitions under CalNAGPRA. And those definitions may not matter to the university, but they may matter to the tribes.
If there are if tribes are not interested in deaccession, we don't have any way of proceeding.
I'm wondering, would you be interested in it, or would you consider delaying it?
Because again, we're not delaying it. We're prepared to go forward. If no one wants to receive it, it will be delayed.
My question is, instead of going forward, because we just got this decision yesterday at 4:30,
mm-hmm.
would you see Davis consider delaying the deaccession process to allow for the consideration of, one, tribal views, because they weren't considered in this in the ad hoc part, because the ad hoc decision just came out. The possibility of the ad hoc decision wasn't even made public or to all the tribes. It was kept internally. And we only found out because we got an email. So tribes weren't even involved in the recommendations or told about the recommendations before that recommendation was passed on to the provost who accepted it. And so you're deaccessioning between 6,000 and 7,000 items, because one thing said 7, one thing said 6, which have not been identified to determine what they are. It's not clear to whom they're going. It's not clear the policies that you're going to use to determine where they're going to go. And so I guess my question is, given the lengthy delay that you've already had, what is the interest in accelerating a deaccession process that's not clear to the tribes, not clear to the commission, and not clear where this stuff is going to go or how it's going to be identified? What is the impetus?
The impetus was to return the belongings. I mean, that's the impetus. And so, if that's not the way that, you know, you all wish the items to be returned, then we will cooperate with whatever process.
So
it was the compromise of our faculty to try to accomplish what we understood to be the interests, the tribal interests expressed, is to return the items. Absolutely, this can be delayed for a long time.
The tribal interest.
What's that?
That's a really simplistic view of the tribal interests. It's more complicated than that.
And if that's not the tribal interest, then we will continue to consult.
And with the commission's interest as well.
Absolutely.
Right. And I think what a vein of what our general counsel is asking is there a time restriction on this offer to go through deaccession?
We can't.
Or can we continue to go through the appropriate legal processes that entitles everybody to their rights now? Keep going with that.
So we can't deaccession
and then delay deaccession until a later point in time. If that's still on the table as a viable
option for folks.
We can't deaccession without a request. So if there's no request for the deaccession to start, we don't have anything to proceed with.
Any other questions from council?
I have one question.
So was there any more from council?
No.
Thank you. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your information that you've shared. I don't want to make false assumptions. Could you tell me on your ad hoc committee of two, at any time, was there outreach to the descendants of these items made?
There was not, that I am aware of.
All right. So it was just these two individuals who may or may not have relations with tribes.
Correct. They are on our committee.
All right. And the ad hoc committee of two, was that ever made, that information of designation ever made available to the descendants of these items?
I believe that we informed the UAIC that we were proceeding with our dispute resolution process according to our internal policy. I believe
and the creation of an ad hoc committee.
Yes, I believe all consulting tribes were notified of the recommendation of the ad hoc committee.
No, I'm not talking about the recommendation, the creation and designation of the two individuals. They were all made aware of that.
They were made aware that we were putting together a committee. I don't know if they were told until after the process the identities of the committee members.
Was any outreach made to those descendants of those tribes, of the individuals and their burial goods in question? Was any outreach made to them as to who they like to participate on this ad hoc committee?
No, not that I'm aware of.
Thank you very much. I have no other questions.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Any other speakers on closed session item? I have no other speaker slips.
Chair, I hate to interrupt, but we received a letter from Wilton Rancheria and from the chairman of Wilton Rancheria on this, and I assured him that because they could not be present, we received this at 10:42 last night, that I would read it into the record if I may be so inclined.
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, it says, "Dear Commissioners, I'm writing this letter on behalf of Wilton Rancheria. My tribe is one of the consulting tribes on the NAGPRA inventory process for the Auburn Dam Collection, Accession 32, held at UC Davis. We write to express our preferences that the collection be processed for repatriation without further handling, including without the imposition of potential impediments to repatriation, i.e. museum practices, that are not required by NAGPRA or CalNAGPRA, and that actual repatriation to tribes be completed as quickly as possible. We also write to request that cultural items, including funerary objects, be identified based on the traditional knowledge of affiliated tribes' culture. Tribal traditional cultural knowledge is based on geographical, biological, folkloric, linguistic, and historical evidence, as well as kinship information and oral traditions. The current process gives more weight to identifications made by museum staff who are only using archaeological and anthropological evidence than those made by tribes. Unsurprisingly, when identifications of cultural items are limited to those that are made by museum staff, many items that tribes identify as cultural are left out of inventories and therefore not repatriated. It is important to us that all cultural items and funerary objects be repatriated to tribes. Sincerely, Raymond C. Hitchcock, Tribal Chairman." That's it.
Thank you for that. Any other comments? Hearing not, this time we'll go into closed session. from April 6, 2018. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of April 6, 2018? There's been a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
There's been a second. Any further discussion? Any public comment? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion. One abstention? Okay. Commissioner Pagaling is an abstention on item A. Moving on to item B, April 6, 2018, closed session minutes. Is there a motion? There's been a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
One
abstention. Two abstentions. Commissioner Stensley and Commissioner Pagling abstain. That concludes item three. Moving on to old business, item one. I do need to step out on this and turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Laura Moran.
Are we doing public comments, or are we doing an intro? Do you want to do?
I'll do
Terry Robinson, our general counsel, will do an intro background on this item.
Vice Chairwoman, Commissioners, this matter has of the repatriation process under CalNAGPRA for a Session 32 from the Auburn Dam, as between United Auburn Community, UC Davis. And UC Davis has been before this commission since January. And in light of many other recent turn of events, I was informed that United Auburn may also wish, outside of whatever the commission would consider in closed session, to petition the commission for perhaps additional intervention, of which I'm not certain they're going to request. And so we put it on as an action item to be heard and to allow the United Auburn to come forward with whatever it is that they may petition in terms of the ongoing ongoing dispute between United Auburn and UC Davis with respect to compliance with CalNAGPRA and issues with respect to the repatriation process and decisions that have been made thus far. Is that a fair assessment?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So,
Christina, do you want to?
Yeah. The commission staff will be continuing discussions with UC Davis on this, but there is no action item that came out of closed session.
So we have a number of speaker slips that we received on this item, number one. And we're going to be enforcing the time limit, which is 3 minutes. So I'll just call them up in order that we have Gabe Caton from United Auburn Indian Community.
No. My name is Gabe Caton. Thanks for hearing us. Last April, I'm with UAIC, I'm a tribal council member, and last April I came to you and asked for help in repatriating our collection of burials, grave offerings, and cultural affiliated items with my tribe that UC Davis has held for more than 50 years now. At that time, we were waiting for UC Davis to submit its CalNAGPRA inventories to you so that we could proceed with the dispute resolution. Our understanding is that those inventories were submitted and that they identified only small portions of the collection for repatriation. We ask that you direct your staff to publish notice of these inventories required by CalNAGPRA so that we can proceed with the dispute resolution over the missing items. We would also like to update you on what has happened with UC Davis since your last meeting. This includes an update from the Auburn Dam collection, but also for the Brazil burial mound from Sacramento County, which our tribal historic preservation officer Matt Moore will discuss following me. At its heart, this is a dispute over who controls the fate of human remains and grave goods that were dug up in the heart of our homeland and what happens to them after they become an academic bone collection. This was also the heart of the Feather River dispute, as well as many others that have arisen on current and past Highway and Levee construction projects. To us, they're our ancestors whose journeys into the afterlife was violently interrupted more than 50 years ago and painfully remains unresolved. To UC Davis, they're merely archaeological specimens to be handled by curious students, loaned to other institutions, tested and curated in the interest of indifferent and dehumanizing science. Until 1990, when NAGPRA was passed, Native American graves were plundered so that non-Indians could define our history and reinforce dehumanizing theories about American Indians. By 1996, repatriation was a standard practice among most institutions. It wasn't until 2 years ago that UC Davis Professor Emeritus Robert Bettinger lost his long legal fight to prevent the repatriation of Indian remains in the name of science. However, this culture of resistance to repatriation still lives on at UC Davis. We see it in the long delays throughout the repatriation process. We see it in the unnecessary handling of the remains that is done over the objection of the tribes. We see it in their argument that museum practices not required by NAGPRA take precedence over tribal cultural practices. And we see it in their refusal to accept our identifications of our own cultural items. As our TIPO, Matt Moore, will discuss, UC Davis has begun using the same objectionable process on other UAIC-affiliated collection in their control, which is the Brazil burial site in Sacramento County. I was going to follow up on the questions that of the timeline. We were not initiated when they had the ad hoc committee. That we did not have any idea who was on there or any reach out to look over the inventory before we received it, like as you did. So, in conclusion, we would like to respectfully request that the commission direct staff to publish the CalNAGPRA inventory without delay. So, once again, I'd like to thank you on behalf of United Auburn for hearing us and working with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, the inventory will be published. That's not going to be an issue.
Thank you.
Okay, next up, we have Matthew Moore. He's the TIPO for United Auburn.
Good afternoon. Matthew Moore, TIPO for United Auburn. Just wanted to bring to your attention the reoccurring issue of damaging and inappropriate handling of our ancestors and their funerary objects at UC Davis. In addition to the Auburn Dam collection, which Councilman Caton discussed, UC Davis staff have now started to reinventory the burials and funerary objects that were removed from a different site, the Brazil Burial Mound, which is located, as Gabe stated, in Sacramento County. They are using the same protocols to which UAC objected during the Auburn Dam collection process. On April 23rd, we were notified by UC Davis that they would be handling ancestral remains on May 1st in order to revise the minimum number of individuals paperwork that had already been completed in the 1990s. We were told that they had already handled many of the funerary objects from the Brazil burial mound in order to revise the identifications that were made in the original catalog. We again objected to the proposed additional handling of burials, which is unnecessary, would damage those ancestors, and is disrespectful. We also were disappointed that UC Davis, knowing of our concerns about handling of the Auburn Dam ancestors, went ahead with handling of the Brazil site burial items without first notifying us, which resulted in further harm to the tribe. And us not even being able to ask our ancestors for forgiveness before the work was even performed. We request that UC Davis limit their work to a visual inspection. We also requested mediation in order to address UC Davis's treatment of burials and cultural items, which has been inappropriate and damaging. NAHC staff were copied on these emails, and on May 4th, NAHC legal counsel Terry Robinson offered to assist with coordinating mediation. On May 24th, UC Davis met with NAHC staff to discuss the possibility of mediation, but UC Davis did not allow UAIC representatives to attend. On June 4th, UAIC was copied on a letter from UC Davis in which UC Davis declined to engage in mediation regarding culturally appropriate handling and identification of ancestors, funerary objects, and cultural items. We have written to UC Davis requesting that they reconsider their rejection of mediation regarding the Auburn Dam collection. However, we have not received a response. On June 13th, UC Davis staff proceeded to rehandle and reinventory burials from the Brazil site. Once again, our ancestors were damaged and were handled with lack of respect. We have many other ancestors at UC Davis, so how long will this go on? It is our hope that the CalNAGPRA regulations are prepared. They will address such parties and provide protection for our ancestors. So in the meantime, we just respectfully request that, as we know now, the inventory will be posted, and ask the commission to prepare interim guidance or best practices to advise against such unnecessary handling and provides California-specific guidance on tribes as authority for cultural identifications, consistent with Health and Safety Code 8016I, Public Resource Code 5097.98A, and People versus Van Horn case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Moore.
I'll try to give the speakers 30 seconds notice, brief summary. Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Parliamentarian. Doing a bang up job. The next speaker slip I have is Bob Caton. Auburn.
Afternoon. My name is Bob Caton. I'm a member of the United Auburn Indian Community Tribal Historic Preservation Committee. I'm here today to support the testimony of Tribal Council member Gabe Caton and Tribal Historic Preservation Officer Moore. What we're asking for is not...
There we go.
What we're asking for is... what we're asking for from the... from the institutions is not that unreasonable. It's a matter of basic human rights and basic and civil rights. I'm sorry. Our ancestors should be treated with dignity during the repatriation process. It is inexcusable that they are being damaged as part of the repatriation process. All of our ancestors. Excuse me. All of our ancestors' funerary objects should be returned as part of the repatriation process. When a tribal representative identifies them from a burial site as funerary, it's absurd that a museum representative would veto that identification. Only tribal representatives have the authority to identify what is funerary, or what is sacred. Museum representatives are not part of our culture and have no knowledge of our culture. They do not have the authority to say that something is not a burial offering after we have identified it as a burial offering. Thank you for listening to all this, and I'm messing up here, but thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
The next speaker slip I have is Shasta Goan from Paula Band. She's the TIPO.
Thank you, and good afternoon to all of you. My name is Dr. Shasta Goan. I am the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for the Paula Band of Mission Indians. I also serve as the chair of the National Association of Tribal Historic Preservation Officers and sit in that capacity on the board of the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation. I also facilitate CalTIPO, which is a group that includes all of California's Tribal Historic Preservation Officers. And I appear before you today to support the United Auburn Indian Community, the other Miwok and Nisenan tribes who are consulting on the Auburn Dam and Brazil Burial Mound repatriations, and all tribes who wish to see changes made to the repatriation process under NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA. It is no secret that tribes have long sought the return of their ancestors who have languished in storage and facilities all over the United States. Tribes have also fought for the repatriation of sacred objects, grave goods, and the euphemistically named items of cultural patrimony that remain captured in museums, universities, and laboratories. Tribes are caught in the web of bureaucratic procedures that relegate their intimate knowledge of their own cultures and histories to a footnote in the process of determining cultural affiliation for these collections. This, despite the ACHP acknowledging that tribes themselves are the best and most accurate source of information for determining the affiliation and significance of cultural resources, properties, landscapes, stories, knowledges, histories, and more. From Kennewick Man, the Ancient One, in Washington State, to the Kumeyaay ancestors that were unearthed decades ago at UC San Diego and were only just returned to their rest, tribes have time and again had their points of view dismissed as less relevant than the needs of scientists who privilege their own desire for research over helping to assuage the legacy of collective intergenerational trauma and colonial oppression that has befallen Indian people. I am myself an anthropologist, and I know well how those arguments have been made over the years, but it is well past time for anthropology, archaeology, and academia's old guard to give way to new approaches that put tribal needs first. UC Davis, UC Berkeley, UC San Diego, and many other universities, museums, and other repositories of native remains and objects throughout California and the United States must recognize the law. They must recognize tribal rights. They must recognize the ongoing effects of settler colonialism. They must become part of the solution instead of remaining part of the problem. Tribes are no longer going to sit at the mercy of these institutions. We stand together as tribal peoples and their allies to fight for what never should have been taken away in the first place.
30 seconds.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the final speaker slip I have for this item is Alex Watts Tobin. He's the TIPO for Karuk.
Thank you. Yes, my name is Alex Watts Tobin. I'm the TIPO and archaeologist for the Karuk tribe, I guess giving a perspective from Northern California. And also, personally, I am the son of a scientist who did some very great work with Francis Crick back in the day, and that work which is still cited today. I had a couple of quotes for you from the recent Cal Matters article to justify holding on to Native American bodies. The aforementioned Bettinger said... Maybe this is patronizing from an quoting him. Maybe this is patronizing from an archaeologist's point of view. That's great British understatement there. But I think someday somebody in the Native American community is going to ask, "Why don't we know this?" To justify a scientific analysis. The scientific analysis he is doing. I also want to quote Alfred Kroeber from 1916, writing to Gifford about potential work on Ishii's brain. He said, I must ask you as my personal representative to yield nothing at all under any circumstances if there is any talk in the interests of science. Say for me that science can go to hell. Now, that is 102 years ago, and Alfred Kroeber was not exactly a paragon of virtue when it comes to disposition of Native American remains, and we still seem to be mired in this controversy. In my day job as TIPO, I administer the Karuk Resources Advisory Board, which is frequently visited by representatives and researchers from academic institutions, and we treat them with respect and we work together with them. But there are other researchers who approach it in the wrong way. What I want to say with respect to those two quotes is there is no greater interest of science, and you can't tell tribes what the relevant questions are. And more importantly, if you do not approach tribes in the right way, then you are not even doing science. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, are there any other speakers that wish to speak on this item? Item number one, that we don't have a speaker slip for. Hello.
I have a speaker form filled out if you want it.
Okay. Okay, one more speaker, Michelle Faley, Deputy General Counsel for Pechanga.
Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Faley. I am Deputy General Counsel for the Pechanga Band. And today I'm here to provide some comments on behalf of Pechanga. As a matter of principle, Pechanga absolutely supports Auburn's desire and right to repatriate their ancestral remains and funerary objects. As a matter of policy, the lack of repatriation by some UC campuses is what has caused Pechanga to sponsor AB 2836 so that we can repatriate our ancestors' home in a timely manner. That more than 10,000 ancestral remains are on museum shelves and boxes at UC campuses is an abomination and a stain on the state's government-to-government relations with tribes. Today, the Commission has an opportunity to help reunite Auburn with its ancestors. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, we're moving on. Do we need to... Because is there any discussion among commissioners about item number one?
I have some comments since we have no action. Is this the time?
Yes.
I thought you had something.
What's your pleasure, staff or commissioners' comments first?
Commissioners always first.
Aww. All right. I just want to thank everyone for being here today, representatives from United Auburn, representatives from Pechanga, representatives from Paula, representatives from Karuk, and any other members of other tribes who have not come up to speak and we have not mentioned. I just would like to thank you as well. The repatriation and reburial of our ancestors' remains are a human rights issue, are a civil rights issue, and more importantly, they are a express policy of the state of California that our ancestors be repatriated and then reburied with dignity and respect. I have listened today to, as all of you, to comments from the tribe and comments from UC Davis. I am having a problem specifically to the words that were shared to us by UC Davis in their sincerity. What I've seen to date is a continued behavior and academic culture that excludes traditional cultural knowledge and specifically excludes the perspectives of the descendants of the individuals whose items you want to keep captive. Too much in the academic culture is dependent on anthropological and archaeological theses and conclusions that are based on false assumptions, inadequate information. And knowing this, the university has specifically excluded those individuals who can provide that information. I think it's absolutely imperative that the university acknowledge that this is a human rights issue, is a civil rights issue, is the express policy of the state of California, in which it is a part and benefits from, and includes those descendants in making determinations as to what is an ancestral funerary good, or whatever terminology you want to use, or specifically the terminology of Kalinagpra, and also in the decision-making process. Just from what you've shared to us today, with very little notice of the back dealings of the university through the ad hoc committee, it doesn't pass the smell test. Because although I have great respect for Professor Middleton, she does not represent the traditional cultural values of the members of the United Auburn community, of the Wilton Rancheria, or any of the other tribes that you have been reaching out to. They should have really taken those perspectives in consideration. These are my opinions. I just do not know if I find sincerity in the university's statement that it would be unconscionable delay if the descension occurred. This is not a delay that was brought upon from the tribes or this commission. So I just wanted to share that. And I do understand that these are complex issues, but we should all come to the table with those basic understandings that this is a human rights issue, a civil rights issue, and that I would ask that the university come back to the table and try to mediate this. Thank you.
Commissioner Pagaling.
I'd just like to echo those thoughts that Mary, my good friend, expressed, because it is a challenge to make a decision with limited amount of information, short amount of time, and we need a moment to really reflect upon what we have. And also, from what we've gathered here, maybe make a recommendation or suggestion along the ways of, hey, let's open the doors, let's come to a table, let's look at what we have before us and find a way in which we can progressively and openly resolve the issues. And I think there's no one, I think I heard one time today a word that is unusual, but I understand where it's coming from. Hate. You know, hate what's going on. It's a struggle. We're facing it daily. It's been expressed here by people providing testimony. And I'd like the opportunity to see some of the agencies that we face, not only with UC Davis, but other agencies, find a way in which we can come back to the table and look at this. Kind of open your ears, get an opportunity. And the same thing with us as Native people. We've got to take a moment to breathe and find out how we get in that table. You know, so everybody take a breath. Let's get going. Let's get down to business. Let's get work done. And let's get this taken care of amicably, peacefully, and doing the right thing. Thank you.
Just a quick comment.
Commissioner Atterbury.
I like to think that I deal in trying to resolve issues. I did feel a little offended about a committee of two. In my mind, that means a quorum of one, which makes no sense. So in an effort to help resolve, there have been success stories out there, repatriation success stories of other tribes. The Karuk tribe had recently had a success story, so my recommendation is you do some research on those success stories and see what you come up with. Yoatwa, thank you.
Commissioner?
50 years is a very long time. I'm very sorry for that. I don't know how many times since I've been on this commission have I heard the same story. Different nation, but the same story from institutions. Why didn't you talk to them? Oh, we didn't know who they are. Well, here they are. Start the dialogue. Or they know who you are, and yet they still refuse. So it's really difficult when we have to fight against that, just common respect for the people that are still here and what we go through, knowing that there are our relatives and everything that's associated with them sitting on those shelves. For some, I'm talking for myself in my area, I wouldn't know where to put some of the things that we know that are on shelves because we are not a federally recognized tribe, my particular band. We have really no land base. And I don't know how much longer our things will sit until we can figure out how we can get our act together to be able to have enough property or land that where they can be protected and put back to rest. But, you know, the difficulties that we face with so much to gain and what the motive is, motivation behind the university to argue and keep and the old, the good old boy laws that are still in effect with NAGPRA and why CalNAGPRA became part of this whole journey is because our voices are still not being heard. So I pray that they can be heard, that they are being heard right now, and that more people speak up. Those that are watching or will watch this meeting online, because we are live, send their comments and letters to, you know, the other places and the other institutions where their items are being held and really start to try to make a big difference about how we handle and how we not have to fight. I'm tired of fighting, tired of arguing, and I'm tired of always pressing our point. I don't know if it were the other way around how it would look. If we had their remains and their cultural items and their, you know, ancestral artifacts, how would that be? Would it be same? Would it be different? I don't know. But again, let's try to do this in a way that we don't fall ill over it, that we can just pull the strength up from the courage and those people who have the strength and the knowledge to help. And so, again, let's move forward with this and to repatriate.
Thank you. I just want to say a couple of things before I turn it over to Terry. Under the California Constitution, the UC is established as the University of California, and it's a public trust. And a public trust is something that's established for the promotion of the public welfare of all of the individuals, not just one or two, but everybody. And I think Native Americans fall within that public trust. And I especially think that Native Americans fall under that public trust because we were here and living here prior to this public trust even being established. I think it's time that UC and UC Davis, and in question of this agenda item, steps up to acknowledge that one person cannot make decisions about the nature of cultural resources that are affiliated with tribal governments in this state. One or two people can't make those decisions. I'm encouraging that, my comments are encouraging that this be brought up to a UC Regents level, that it not only be the campus and certain individual staff or campus folks that are making these decisions. I'm also encouraging that the tribes' voices be brought in early in the process. and before the inventories are created, before the inventories are finalized, before the inventories are handed off to an entity like the Native American Heritage Commission or for publication in a document. This, to me, is where the rubber hits the road. It's the acknowledgement that tribes have information that's integral to the record here. That is, this is not about just returning items. This is about a process and about an acknowledgement and about a healing for this entire situation that's in front of us. And yes, it's complex, but there are ways to do this that are open, that are acknowledging everybody's role, that are acknowledging that tribal governments now have a different status and a different legal status, if you will, in the state of California than they had in 1990 when NAGPRA was passed. And there have been amendments to NAGPRA. And there has been CalNAGPRA that's been passed by the state legislature. And one of the reasons that CalNAGPRA was introduced and passed was because we were having this very problem of the UC using a way they were interpreting NAGPRA definitions and NAGPRA processes in a way that excluded tribal information and in a way that excluded tribal involvement. And we're still having this issue. So that is one of the specific reasons why CalNAGPRA was put in place. And many of us on this commission know this, and many of these people, the people in here today, know this because we all worked on it for those reasons. So it's really hard. This is emotionally very difficult for all of us to sit here and as Julie's saying, we've been talking about these issues. A number of us have been working on these issues for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and it's the same problem. So we're a commission that is now, thank goodness, coming into being funded at a level and having staff at a level where we can finally engage on some of these issues in a real way. And we're going to do that, and we are doing that. So we're ready to take this in the direction that it needs to go. And you have my personal commitment for that, because as a student at UCLA, that's how my whole legal career started, because of repatriation issues at UCLA. And so this is an issue that means very much to me personally, as it does all of the commissioners here. And I just want to put the prayer out there, to put the prayer out there that we can come to a peaceful resolution about this and some healing for all of us. Thank you.
Well, I just wanted to address the request. It doesn't require action from the commission. We will be publishing the inventory, and I will be doing what I can to keep, because you do have a CalNAGPRA claim, to keep the CalNAGPRA process with respect to that claim on track. We will be continuing discussions with UC Davis to the extent that UC Davis continues to wanting to engage with us. The goal is resolution. The goal is repatriation. And it doesn't really matter how we get there, but the point is to try to get there. I don't normally indulge in things like that, but I'm just curious, how many of you here are UC alums? And of those, how many of you are UC Davis alums? So you are UC too. I'm not. I'm a Stanford alum. But but you are UC too, and you have an interest in the outcome. You are UC also. It's not just the people who are there. It's the people who have been there. You have an interest in the outcome. So that's all I have to say. We're going to do our best to keep it forward. I am immensely grateful for the assistance of the Department of Justice. John jumped in immediately. I'm going to be his right hand, and I'm very, very grateful, not just for the assistance, but the quality
and the commitment of assistance that we get from John Applebaum. I am just, I'm just very, very grateful. So I'll leave it at that. No, there's no action.
Okay.
So we can bring James back if you
like. We can bring Chairman Ramos back. Does somebody want to fetch him? So we'll move on. We'll keep moving on the agenda. Old business number two, special interest license plate. Sam,
that would be you.
Cyprit, I think, is giving the update.
Okay, I'll just to get it started. The prototypes of the Protect Native Culture license plate have been printed by the DMV, and Sam, who is the lead on this project, is working with them to get the plate tested. The plate has to be able to be read at dawn, daylight, and dusk, and then once the final... Yes, Sam is actually featured on Twitter with a copy of the plate. I took a picture of myself with it and put it on Facebook, and all my friends said, "You don't look as good as the plate. You need to comb your hair." So, but they wanted the plate. But they said, "You should not be repping the plate. You need to fix this." So once the prototype is approved, we can prepare to launch the campaign. We're making inroads on getting marketing, public relations, and social media services in place to help launch this plate. But we are really going to be looking towards the commissioners, Christina, and Debbie to be plate ambassadors to make presentations to tribes and potential corporate sponsors. Sam's already worked on a prototype website that includes videos from the 40th anniversary, because many of the speeches that were given at the time really encapsulated what the plate is about. And the other thing that's really important about the plate is when the commission submitted its budget change proposal that was the basis for these new positions that we've been granted, the revenue from the plate was very much a part of swaying that. And so we have to get the plate launched this year. We have to get the minimum number, although our goal is 20,000 plates, because that revenue is going to be really important in terms of funding the programs that the plate says. And a lot of those programs you already do. The plate will fund the implementation of CalNAGPRA. We're already doing this on a shoestring and a prayer and a lot of John Applebaum, but we'll have funding for that. I'll leave it to Sam to discuss where we are, but it's been Sam's hard work that's gotten us this far, and someone who never gets mentioned, Sam's partner, Curtis Corona, who's been working on all of the digital stuff on this that you don't get credit for. He's behind the scenes, and he's been an integral part of all this, too. So with that, I'll leave it to Sam.
Well, Terry covered most of kind of where we're at. So basically, we... a couple of weeks ago received three different prototype plates. They were all the same idea, the same design that you approved, just with slightly different background colors. And so one of the big discussions that we had with DMV was the idea of the brown lettering for the actual license plate numbers themselves. And initially we got a fair amount of pushback on that and said that they had to be blue. And so I pushed back a little bit on that to find out why, and so we ended up reaching a resolution that we could have the brown letters, but we needed to make sure that the contrast was there. So in the interest of that contrast, we did lighten the background a little bit, so you'll see before it was kind of a little bit of a darker tan, now it's a little bit lighter, and it's in the interest of reaching the contrast that CHP requires for all of their scanners and things along those lines. So now, like Terry said, where we're at is we've approved this. This is the actual one that we approved. And they are now have printed the prototypes to go over to CHP for the testing to make sure that they can be read at the three different times a day, like Terry discussed, and then also in the scanners, like for Fast Track and Bridge Tolls and all of those different things. So then once we receive that back and that approval, hopefully that approval, then we will then meet with DMV. They'll review our website. They will review the marketing materials, which you guys have seen in previous meetings, the pamphlets, the poster boards, those items. And then once we are approved on all of that, we will enter into a memorandum of understanding with them, and then we will actually be able to officially launch the plate. So our goal and is, in, like Terry said, by Indigenous Peoples Day this year. And so that is obviously predicated on the appropriate levels of approval, which is October 8th, if anyone is wondering. So that's what we're hoping for, but that's a little bit out of, beyond our control, but that's the goal that we're shooting for. So once we'll keep you all up to date on that process as we move through it. And then obviously once we actually are nearing the official launch date, you will all be informed of that. As Terry said, we will be looking for commissioner staff and public response to be plate ambassadors to go out to communities, because as we've discussed kind of ad nauseum, the way we're going to get to the numbers that we need to be is really through fleet purchases. Obviously, individual purchasers are important, but all of the plates that I've seen that have been very successful are successful through fleets. And so those of you who are members of large tribal communities where the tribes themselves own large amounts of cars or other vehicles, that's really where we're going to need the tribal community support in this. And then you can also purchase plates as gifts. So if tribes were interested in purchasing their membership plates for their personal vehicles, they could do that as well.
If you're going to want your plate personalized, you should get the personalized plate first, and then you can have that personalization transferred to your Protect Native Culture plate. For example, Sam went out and made sure that she got Native plate that's been on all of her marketing materials. So now it's riding around on her car waiting for the plate to be issued. And so I'll just tell you that Thule is taken. I got that as for somebody. So if there's going to be personalized things that you want to see on your plate, you should get the personalized plate first.
Yeah.
And then once that plate issues, transfer it.
Yeah, that was a question that we had received from DMV, because we were using that Native plate lettering on all of our marketing materials. They wanted to know if that was an actual plate in use, and it wasn't. But I did get worried that someone might do that, so I did it. So now it's on my car. So, I just wanted to make sure that, we owned it so that it wouldn't become an issue later of someone saying, you're using my license plate for marketing.
Also, I encourage you all to take a selfie with the plate before you leave.
Yeah. Well, we might take it. Maybe we can take a commission photo with it before we leave. Yeah. Yeah, lots of selfies. In addition to the selfies, also maybe a group picture. Okay.
We'll break and do a quick picture.
Perfect. So thank you guys for your support and your patience. I know it's been a really long process, but we're getting. I mean, just seeing an actual plate is a really exciting step. So.
That's right.
So yeah, thank you.
Well, it's good. Thank you. Thank you for all that, and Native Plate 1, Native Plate 2, Native Plate 3.
Yeah.
All right. Any other questions on item 2, old business? Hearing none. Moving on to item 3.
I am pleased with the MLD regulations. We're going to need to delay them again, and I know that's disheartening, but it's for a very good reason. Right now, because of the budget change proposal that went through, granted by the legislature, signed by the governor, we are trying to fill the 10 positions that were provided for this year. In the strategic plan, it was proposed that we get 15. There was doubts as to whether or not we could even fill 10. And we wouldn't even be here but for Christina's advocacy, because the strategic plan was just words. She actually made the money come through. So what we're trying to do is we're trying to do everything we can to fill those positions, to get, and to be clear, It's not just the money that's involved. There are approvals through CalHR, State Personnel Board, as to some of the career executive assignment positions, the attorney positions. So it's going to be a process. We're trying to get it done before the end of the year. And so we need to have that pause to fill those positions because Debbie and I are the ones working on it. We have to write all the duty statements. All of the things that are required to get this going, Debbie and I are doing it, and Debbie's the lead. But the other thing that has to happen in addition to filling those positions is that that budget change proposal was predicated in part on two projections of revenue. One was the fees from the Sacred Lands file, and two is a license plate. And so it's not enough for us to get the positions. We also have to generate the funding to support that budget change proposal because we do not want to go back before the Department of Finance and the legislature next year and not show that the revenue that we projected isn't there to support the positions and the actions that the commission, for which the commission was getting the budget change proposal. And it speaks to a larger issue that the commission really does not really have dedicated administrative staff. You have people who are wearing two hats. Christina wears two hats. Debbie wears two hats. Sam wears two hats. I wear two hats. And between us, we are able to cobble together, mostly Debbie, the administrative functions of the agency. And part of this BCP is to get people who will do those administrative functions so I can go back to practicing law. Debbie can go back to managing environmental and cultural. And Christina just still gets stuck wearing two hats. I can't do anything about that. So with that, the point is that at best the MLD regulations will have to run either alongside the Sacred Lands file fees or right behind them. But right now it's really about filling the positions, getting the money, and building the infrastructure of this agency so that we can do all the things that people have come to expect of us. And while we have the opportunity, because we are facing a change of administrations, and I don't predict the future as to what that's going to mean for the agency. So,
all right. So that was a, more of like an update of we're still working on getting that back here for action from the commission. Do we know where the license plate is? Because Reggie's here now, so we could take a quick picture, and then he needs to run to catch his plane. And then we'll pick up on item four, old business, after we just take a short photograph.
You're so
So the update was that we're going to, well, go ahead.
They'll be, so they're in the approval process now. So once they're officially approved by CHP and DMV, then they'll actually launch. And then from the day that they launch, we have a year to get at least 7,500 subscriptions. And then at the point where we get that 7,500 subscription,
yeah,
then we will.
So you could go on the Native American Heritage Commission website and reserve your plate. We're trying to get 7,500 of them reserved, so that puts us in a good position to move forward. So you know, talk to all your family, all your relations, everybody, get them to sign up. It'll be cool when everybody's driving around with them. Thank you.
The issue is that it has to be between the long adults, wider than three inches. That is as big as we could be. It can only take up the space of one character. So since we removed the character on the license plate, then it can only take up the space that that character would have occupied.
Where is our stop?
But yeah, so that we went back and forth quite a bit on that, and that was as good as we could make it.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, so you can reserve that in moving forward. Moving on to item 4, old business.
Chairman, Commissioners, I just have a brief report about the UCLA NHC Tribal Cultural Resources Project, and Vice Chairwoman Miranda may want to also chime in. The project held its first class this spring. There are 5 students who worked on 2 cultural projects. 2 worked on a consultation ordinance for the Lone Pine Paiute Shoshone tribe, and other tribes also weighed in on that draft consultation ordinance, and Kathy Bancroft, the TIPO for Lone Pine, has indicated her willingness to share that ordinance as a model and template for other tribes. And 3 students worked with Vice Chairwoman Miranda on drafting a guidance document that explains the CEQA process for project review, AB 52 and other provisions for tribal consultation, and how Indigenous peoples can engage in consultations. We still have a student, Melissa Rapp. If you're out there, Melissa, thank you. She's a rising 2L from UCLA. So there's just UCLA, it's just running things. And she's continued to work, I'm not even mad, work over the summer with Vice Chairwoman Miranda and Professor Bill Wood with the goal of having a draft to share in early August for feedback and comments for a final document that's publicly available. In terms of tribes that were served or consulted, the Fernandinho Tatavian Band of Mission Indians, the Karut Tribe, and United Auburn have benefited from the project, and then there were 2 tribes that were turned away. One is a coastal tribe that wasn't named, and the Ohlone, Costanoan, and Esalen Nation were turned away for lack of students to provide assistance on their projects. Professor Bill Wood, who led the class this year, is entering a doctoral program this fall, so Lauren Van Schilfgaard, who is a tribal law specialist with Southwestern Law School's Tribal Law and Policy Institute, will be teaching the class this coming fall, and we hope to meet with her and Professor Wood to discuss plans for the fall class, which begins August 22nd and ends on November 20th, with December 14th being the last day for students to complete their projects. It looks like there may be 4 students for the fall clinic available to work on 2 projects at most. Professor Wood did have some concerns about the project, and so I'll just briefly share them. Typically, the people who teach this course for the project teach it part-time, and they have a full-time load, and that will be the same for Professor Van Schilfgaard. So that's something to be in mind, that you don't have one teacher who is in devoting their entire load to this clinic. At UCLA, clinic enrollment is usually capped at 8 students, so there will always be a limited number of students, and as a result, a limited number of projects they can undertake, and students are usually assigned 2 to a project. The clinic is not offered year-round, so requests from tribes during periods when the clinic is not offered can't be honored at that time. And finally, the law school generally requires an enrollment of at least 6 students for a clinic, and but for our contract with UCLA and a grant from the Intertribal Court of Southern California, the clinic might not be offered at all if enrollment were below 6 students. So the funding from the commission is keeping the clinic going regardless of the amount of enrollment. I just wanted to thank Professor Wood and Vice Chairwoman Miranda, who
stepped in and just really gave a lot of needed guidance. And you could tell when we met with the students, they were very appreciative. And to have their own come back and do it, I think, had meaning beyond words. So we're just looking forward to the next year and very grateful for the work that's been done. With that.
So I know you all want this because my tribe wants this, a handbook to help tribes know how to participate in the CEQA process and to carry out the AB 52 process. So that's one of the projects that we're doing under this UCLA NAHC grant. And so I've been working with the students in compiling first all of the resources that are out there on this and indexing them, and then putting together a major overview of an outline of what a handbook or a guidance book might look like that would be written for tribes. And this would be from that perspective. There's a piece of guidance out there that's the OPR advisory that's mostly geared towards lead agencies. So we're looking to do something for tribes. And this is a big project. I just want to say that. And so I know Professor Wood had written in that we might have something by August. I'm not sure about that. But we will definitely have the beginnings of what I'm hoping either myself or other folks that can step in voluntarily, because I'm doing this completely, you know, from a volunteer perspective, because I care about creating this type of resource, and I care about tribes having this guidance, that we can then, there might be a group of us that can step in to help finish this off for the commission. And it would be something that the commission could offer and publish on their website. It could turn into something that would have video offshoots of practitioners speaking about certain topical areas that are, is there, somebody's phone must be going. So that's what we're doing right now. And I'm hoping that we at least have some kind of draft. We already have many tribes that are interested in contributing sort of their best practices, basically, plus their documents, that they, their template letters and their documents that they might use when they correspond with agencies, ideas for confidentiality agreements and different other types of agreements that you might enter into before consultation agreements, consultation protocols. All of those things are what we're looking for too. So if you want to contribute, it's very much welcome that you send in your tribe's best practices, because we want this to reflect like every tribal government's good work throughout the state of California, so we can put that into one place and it be a comprehensive handbook. Thank you.
Any questions from commissioners?
I just have a quick question for Terry or Laura. Thank you for your update. I've been following the project or the pilot project, but I'm curious how UCLA is making their determinations on which tribes they're assisting. It's disconcerting a little that, you know, two tribes were turned away. I just didn't know what the standards of determination are. So that's my question.
I don't know the answer to your question, because I don't know the reasoning why certain projects were selected and certain other projects were not selected. But I have taught the clinic before, so I know that the clinic has certain requirements, that it can't be just a research-based project, and there are certain parameters of the type of work that it needs to be. Like, it needs to fit under legal drafting. And so maybe that had something to do with why those projects were turned away. I'm not sure. But, or do you know, Sam?
I was just on the call with
bill was during the update. And to, it was just my understanding that they came; those projects came after the after the semester had already started, and so the projects had already been they were already in process. And so, there just wasn't any available students. Terry just came back, but she might be able. But that was my understanding, was simply that the projects that they had, the request came after the semester had already started.
Was there outreach done to the two that were selected and the other two that weren't just didn't get back in time? I'm just curious. I'm a Southern California tribe. We didn't get contacted.
Terry, sorry. There's a question about the projects that were selected for assistance and then the ones that were not. And I said that I know that Bill had mentioned that they had come to him after the semester had already started, the ones that were that they were not able to help. And so Commissioner Lopez Kiefer is just wondering what outreach was done to the tribes prior to the start of the semester.
I don't remember the extent of it, but I know that there was outreach to the tribes because I think that's how they ended up getting Lone Pine involved, because Lone Pine's not very close to UCLA. So I can't speak to the extent of it, but I know that there was outreach done.
That's something we can also, in the next meeting, probably discuss with. As this next semester gets started, we can find out more details about the outreach that's being done and how that can be.
Right. I'd like to know about the outreach and also the evaluation and who's making the determination. Thank
okay.
you.
No problem.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions from commissioners? Hearing none. Informational item, old business is done. New business items. Item one, commissioner reports, James Ramos. You just seen the update on the license plate that's there, and you're going to hear an update on the budget where we're actually able to increase our staff by, I believe, a record amount here, and even with the budget increasing in record amounts also. So you see the importance of the commission, what it is that we're doing, and the importance that it is to the state. And also, you're going to hear another update as far as the Indian Heritage Center report, because that also was part of the budget. So this was a good year for the Native American Heritage Commission and for California Indian people in the state of California as far as this governor recognizing us in the budget and the process throughout that time. That's a little announcement there. Moving on to Executive Secretary.
Thank you. So I'm going to start with our environmental and cultural report. Staff's processed 1,787 CEQA project requests. These project requests required staff to conduct 4,349 searches of the sacred lands file. Staff has processed 240 timber harvest project requests. Those project requests required staff to conduct 1,019 searches of the sacred lands file. Staff has processed and responded to 177 AB 52 requests and 78 SB 18 requests. The Commission received 648 CEQA environmental documents from the California State Clearinghouse to review, analyze, and file comment when needed. They include negative declarations, mitigated negative declarations, draft EIRs, and notice of preparations. Staff filed comments of concern to 106 of these documents, or of these projects, excuse me. In accordance with California state law, the County Coroner's Office reported 15 inadvertent discoveries of Native American human remains to the Commission. 15 MLD designations were made utilizing various resources such as MLD database register, information submitted by tribal governments, and various scholar references. We've conducted various consultation with tribal governments, with the Confederated Villages of Lijan, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion on the tribal consultation list. The tribe has continued to process to meet the criteria, and staff continues to meet with the tribe to assist the tribe in their efforts for inclusion on the consultation list. The Etna Band / Ruffy Rancheria, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion on the tribal consultation list. The tribe has begun the process to meet the criteria. Wintu of Hay Fork, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion on the tribal consultation list. Staff continues to consult and assist the tribe in their efforts for inclusion on the list. Yokayo Tribe, a non-federally recognized tribe, has been approved and is included on the tribal consultation list. Nashville Band of Miwok Indians, a non-federally recognized tribe, requested inclusion on the tribal consultation list. Staff continues to consult and assist their tribe in their efforts for inclusion. Wukchumni Tribe, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion and staff continues to consult and assist their tribe in their efforts. Miwok tribe, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion, and the tribe has begun the process. Kekun Taruk, a non-federally recognized tribe, requesting inclusion on the list. Staff is continuing to consult and assist the tribe. Buena Vista Rancheria Band of Miwok Indians, and they are consulting with cultural resources staff. Indian Canyon Mutsun Band of Costanoan, a non-federally recognized tribe, consultation of Sacred Lands File listing of sites. The Sacred Lands File contains 1,982 records. Staff has completed the initial analysis of the Sacred Lands File. Tribes added 15 new records to the Sacred Lands File. Staff has worked with the following tribes: Pechanga Band of Luiseno Indians, United Auburn Indian Community, San Manuel Band of Mission Indians, Federated Indians of Great and Rancheria, Keej Nation, and Calaveras Band of Miwok Grimes. Staff currently are analyzing the Sacred Lands File to identify issues for tribal consultation. We've had project meetings on the tribal directory. It's now in its final review and will go to the printer next week. Staff will be sending out order forms to all state agencies for pre-orders, and the directory will be $41 to purchase. Training presentations, two staff members attended some writing classes. Staff updated 17 tribal records on the NALIS database system, and staff attends ongoing meetings with Resources Agency to update searchable features to provide more in-depth reports, address various database problems, and set up in-house GIS mapping ability. We're meeting with various State Lands Commission accounting and budgets personnel regarding the 2017-2018 fiscal year expenditures, contracts, and budget projections, and various meetings with State Lands Commission HR regarding our hiring for the 10 new positions. On the legal side, the commission is a real party in interest in two lawsuits challenging the settlement reached between the NAHC and the Foothill Eastern Transportation Corridor Agency. These lawsuits are ongoing. The legal department weighed in on an AT&T cell tower project on behalf of several California tribes to explain that to the environmental consulting firm involved that only California Native American tribes can participate in AB 52 consultation, and only TIPOs from tribes that place religious or cultural significance on a project area may participate in Section 106 consultation. Two out-of-state tribes sought to comment and receive consultation fees for the project. On Morrow Rock, we've been contacted by counsel for one tribe that is interested in appealing the Morrow Rock determinations made by Dr. Wendy Teeter in her report and has asked for additional documents in the matter to decide whether to appeal. The legal department is gathering the documents and will provide an extension of time to all tribes involved to appeal the findings. To expedite review and processing of pending and potential additional CalNAGPRA claims, the legal department issued an RFP for a CalNAGPRA consultant. No responses were received. Going forward, the legal department intends to hire an attorney this year who will be responsible for handling all CalNAGPRA matters with the help of a legal assistant and an office technician. The Environmental and Cultural Department Director Debbie Treadway and General Counsel Terry Robinson have been tasked with working with State Lands on the recruitment to fill the 10 additional positions provided for in the Commission's 2018-2019 budget change proposal. The goal is to fill these positions before the end of the calendar year. And General Counsel submitted comments on UC Davis's draft strategic plan on behalf of the Native American Heritage Commission, encouraging the university to integrate compliance with CalNAGPRA with its NAGPRA compliance. And very quickly, I'm going to give you a quick overview of AB 2836, which would implicate the commission and its potential duties. So it was last amended on May 25th, 2018. And it would require the regents of the University of California to establish and support a system-wide NAGPRA repatriations committee, and for each campus, subject to the federal act, a campus implementation committee. Membership in the committee will include two voting members from federally recognized California tribes, one voting member from a non-federally recognized tribe as defined in CalNAGPRA, four voting members from the UC system, and no fewer than two shall be affiliated with American Indian or Native American Studies program, and all of them have to have either a degree in archaeology, anthropology, Native American Studies, ethnic studies, or history with a focus on California. Membership of the campus NAGPRA committees will include again, two voting members from federally recognized Indian tribes. In California, one voting member from a non-federally recognized tribe as defined in CalNAGPRA, and three voting members from the UC system with the same qualifications as previously stated. It would require the UC system to adopt state system-wide policies to implement NAGPRA and CalNAGPRA in consultation with the California Native American tribes, and those policies would be submitted to the commission for approval no later than July 1st, 2019. It would also allow UC campuses to adopt policies and procedures to supplement the system-wide policies and procedures within 6 months of the commission's approval of those policies, and the campus policies would have to be reviewed and approved by the commission. And that's it.
All right. A lot of work. You can see why the budget's increasing, why we need more people. Hear all the good work that's going on here. Next, are you going to be able to give the update on the California Indian Heritage Center?
I am.
All right.
So on June 27th, Governor Brown signed his final state budget, which included $100 million for the development and construction. For the development and construction of a California Indian Heritage Center in partnership with California Tribes and the Parks Department. The amount is roughly half of the previous estimated cost to build a world-class facility. The other $100 million would be raised through private and tribal funding. The Heritage Center aims to serve as a center of statewide significance for cultural preservation, learning and exchange, land stewardship based on Native American values, and a place to engage all visitors in celebrating the living cultures of California tribes from their own perspectives. The Office of the Tribal Advisor, which is me, is holding seven formal government-to-government consultation meetings in August on behalf of the governor's office to discuss past efforts and next steps on the project before we get started on anything. And they are part of an ongoing consultation process and are just the beginning of a long effort of working with tribes to make sure that this looks like something that tribes really want. So there's not really a deadline on comments if you have any. And the letter for those consultation dates is going to be going out on Monday. And they're all over the state, so they should be fairly accessible. In 2002, SB 2063 under Brulte appropriated $5 million to establish a task force made up of tribal leaders and museum curators to advise and make recommendations for the development of a new museum to house the cultural items that had, there's about 40,000 items that's in the state parks collection from. There's a long history. I can send out the link online. But so they wanted to have a more culturally appropriate place for these items because currently they were housed at Sutter's Fort, which, as we all know, is not the best place for our items or the most respectful place for our items. The task force held deliberative and sensitive discussions with tribal communities and other stakeholders to develop a concept master plan for the project, landing on the name the California Indian Heritage Center, and created a list of more culturally sensitive sites for those items. Right now, a site in West Sacramento, located at the confluence of the Sacramento and American Rivers, is being negotiated, but there are other sites that could be considered if that isn't finalized. The last movement on the project took place in 2008, but with the governor's renewed commitment to the development and construction of the center, we will be accepting ongoing comments to better shape the project's next steps from the perspective of the California's tribal nations.
All right. And if that wasn't enough, you could keep going to item four, Native American Heritage Commission budget.
So our request to increase our budget to $2,749,000 to accommodate 10 new positions to help us meet our statutory obligations was included in the May revised budget. It'll allow us to increase that staff and will allow us to better oversee our CalNAGPRA regulatory and ongoing enforcement and compliance duties.
Yeah. Any questions on any of those items that she's reported on, that our executive secretary has reported on? Sounds good. Any questions, Commissioner Moretta?
Can you just remind or update the items that the cultural items that were being held at Sutter's Fort? I remember they've been there for a while. What's the status on
how those are getting returned?
So many of those items were in storage units in West Sacramento that were not appropriate for housing of these items. So right now they're at the McClellan Air Force Base, and they're being held there basically and curated. And I believe that the governor's policy is one of repatriation, and so those that can be identified and repatriated under CalNAGPRA will be repatriated, and then the rest would be housed at this new facility once it's up and running. But right now they're in a climate-controlled facility so that they're not out in front of the public. And and to those of you that don't know about this facility, you can go and visit and see these items. I encourage you to go see what they have, because it will motivate you even more to get something like this up and running.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you for that report, and thank you for all your hard work, and thank you to all the staff for all your hard work. Moving on to item 5, collaboration with tribes. Sarah?
Right. Good afternoon. Thank you for making the time on your agenda for me. I know time is limited, so I will jump right in. My name is Sarah Allred. I'm the statewide Native American Cultural Studies branch chief for California Department of Transportation, otherwise known as Caltrans. And I work on statewide policy regarding tribal outreach and consultation efforts conducted as part of Caltrans environmental review and project delivery processes for transportation development in the state. And I also provide guidance to and support to the 12 Caltrans districts that are distributed geographically throughout the state. And I'm here today just to talk briefly about how Caltrans addresses cultural resources during planning and development of transportation projects. I think I just lost the microphone. Oh, okay, right, okay. Also to invite tribal leaders and representatives to engage in proactive discussions with Caltrans about best practices for the identification and treatment of tribal heritage resources in the context of transportation planning and development, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later. I also just wanted to take a moment to point out that for the benefit of tribes who maybe listening to this remotely.
Can you back away from the mic, because it's really hard to hear
sorry.
What you're saying. It's
all right.
Too
better back
it's
here.
It's muffling it. Yeah.
Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Do I need to repeat anything? Okay. So, but basically, here to talk about Caltrans processes with cultural resources, and get the word out to tribal communities that we're really interested in proactive discussions. So I wanted to take a moment to point out, for the benefit of tribes who might be listening remotely or here as well, that there are actually two main divisions within Caltrans that work with tribal governments. The first is called the Native American Liaison Branch, which is part of the department's Division of Transportation Planning. And the Native American Liaison Branch primarily works with tribes in the context of statewide transportation planning and programming process to identify and address tribal transportation needs and funding sources. And then the other division involves my branch, the Native American Cultural Studies branch, which is part of the Division of Environmental Analysis and Project Delivery. And as I mentioned earlier, the focus of the Native American Cultural Studies branch is working with tribes on cultural resources investigations that are conducted in the context of environmental review and project delivery. Just wanted to make that distinction clear so that our tribal partners are aware of the differences and able to direct their inquiries accordingly, depending on the nature of their concerns. And I know it can be confusing sometimes because of the two branches. So as you know, Caltrans is a public transportation infrastructure development agency. Our primary focus is the mobility and safety of the traveling public.
But in advancing our transportation projects, Caltrans is in a position of having to balance the public need for a project with potential effects to the environment, not the least of which includes tribal heritage resources such as archaeological sites, traditional gathering areas, sacred and ceremonial sites. So although safety and mobility are key to the department's mission, Caltrans maintains stewardship values and seeks to be a good steward of the environment in carrying out its mission. And recognizing that tribal heritage sites are disappearing non-renewable resources on the landscape that are vulnerable to modern development, Caltrans' preference, first order of business is avoidance. We would like to avoid if at all feasible. And so really Caltrans is very much interested in initiating discussions with our tribal partners throughout the state on how best to engage in early planning and coordination efforts toward the goal of achieving avoidance and minimizing potential effects to these non-renewable tribal resources. And really it's through early coordination and collaboration between Caltrans and the tribes that we have a much greater likelihood of achieving success in avoidance. And I can't emphasize that enough, that we really would like to work toward that effort and really work with our tribal partners on that avoidance effort. It's important, though, to be completely transparent and forthright about the fact that while avoidance is our key objective, there are inevitably circumstances where avoidance is simply not going to be feasible in spite of our best efforts. For example, design constraints associated with achieving safety objectives can often be overriding factors, and we really have to consider all of that. So, you know, with that, Caltrans is also very much interested in having these proactive discussions with our tribal partners in advance about what appropriate treatment and mitigation, you know, would look like if avoidance of tribal heritage sites is not feasible. And in particular, we're interested in collaborating to ensure that the mitigation that's developed to resolve adverse effects is meaningful to the tribal community and helps preserve tribal cultural heritage for the benefit of current and future generations. So we welcome tribal input on potential creative mitigation options, and we encourage tribes to consider a variety of creative mitigation ideas in preparation for future discussions with Caltrans or other agencies for that matter. Obviously, mitigation is specific to individual projects and the nature of effects that they may have on a significant resource, but I think by developing that running list of desired mitigation ideas and options, we can be more prepared to resolve adverse effects when we find ourselves in that situation. And, you know, it helps Caltrans better able to address the needs of our tribal consulting parties for specific projects. And then I also wanted to emphasize that we're further interested in collaborating in these discussions with our tribal partners on strategies for ensuring that tribal voices are a part of the cultural resource investigations conducted for transportation projects, and that we want to ensure that traditional tribal knowledge is captured and integrated into the larger cultural preservation effort. So, again, we're seeking to ensure that the preservation of tribal heritage in the work that we do. So because transportation figures so prominently on the landscape, and because Caltrans projects are so numerous and ongoing throughout the entire state, we have a decades-long history of consulting and working with tribes as part of the cultural resources investigations conducted for transportation projects. But by and large, these consultations typically occur between district staff and tribal representatives in the context of specific projects. And so when you're in the heat of project delivery, it's not ideal to sit down and have meaningful conversation. And so, you know, we're really hoping to work with our tribal partners proactively, you know, given the extent to which Caltrans has and will continue to work with tribes throughout California. And really the reason I'm here today is to get the word out that Caltrans is seeking to initiate early consultation meetings with our tribal partners outside of a specific project situation, to have these broader discussions about tribal engagement and participation in cultural resource investigation process for our projects, including receiving input from tribes on their interests, concerns, and values as they relate to Caltrans work within their ancestral territories. Ultimately, the goal here is to foster better mutual understanding between Caltrans and tribes and provide for more productive collaboration toward the protection and preservation of tribal cultural heritage in the context of transportation development. There's a lot to discuss, and I believe opening this dialogue in advance about identification and treatment of tribal heritage sites in the context of transportation planning and development will benefit the resources and will provide for more efficient and effective delivery of transportation projects. So in conjunction with Caltrans district staff, I've visited a number of tribal offices and met with tribal officials to initiate these discussions, and I have a number of upcoming meetings planned with tribes. And I will, of course, continue my outreach efforts with the goal of meeting with any and all tribes who are interested in tribal cultural preservation, whether they're federally recognized or not. And for tribes who are interested in having these discussions, I really encourage them to reach out to me if they have not been contacted yet, because it's going to take me a while. If they wish to meet sooner than later, I'm happy to take measures to schedule that. And I recognize that time and resources are limited, so we're more than happy to meet with tribes at their tribal offices or whatever location is most convenient, and we'll make every effort to accommodate times that are convenient to the tribes. So while it's my desire to meet directly with individual tribes at their tribal offices, along with Caltrans district staff, we recognize that this will take a long time given the number of tribes there are in the state. So in addition to working toward that goal of individual meetings, we welcome any invitation to meet with tribal consortia or speak at tribal conferences involving the attendance of multiple tribes in order to have these discussions. And we look forward to having these conversations. And lastly, I just wanted to leave you with a few announcements regarding some upcoming listening sessions that Caltrans is involved with. And I encourage tribes to consider participating and providing input. I put handouts up front at the entrance with the dates, times, and locations of these events. And, of course, anyone's welcome to contact me if they did not get a copy of that. And so these listening sessions, there's a couple. One is the Federal Highway Administration's revisions to their 326 MOU. I'm sure everyone knows what that is. It's an agreement that basically allows FHWA to assign to Caltrans its authority and responsibility for determining if certain activities are categorically excluded from higher-level environmental review. I'm trying to spit this out as quickly as possible. And there's more information on the website and on the handout that I provided. And then the other listening sessions are California Transportation Plan, the 2050 California Transportation Plan. It's a long-range vision document that provides a framework for how transportation development is envisioned in the state. And so it's not a project in and of itself, but it's it will help guide the planning and development of future projects. So these listening sessions are coming up. The FHWA 326 MOU is July 25th and 27th. It's a webinar. Again, the information is out there. And then the California Transportation Plan listening sessions. One is July 26th at the Tule River Indian Reservation in Porterville, and the other is August 1st at the Blue Lake Rancheria in Blue Lake, California. And I will be happy to take any questions, but otherwise, thank you again for making the time, and I hope the as leaders of the tribal community, you will help me get the word out that we would like to meet. And we look forward, again, to having these discussions with the tribal community. Thank
you. Any questions from commissioners? Commissioner Miranda?
Hi, thank you for coming.
Have you got to reserve your light and flame?
I'll get on that. I would love to.
Yeah, you all have,
I will certainly help spread the word as
fleet.
Well.
All right, Commissioner Miranda.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So you're doing these listening sessions. You want to hear from tribes. What are you going to do with all this information?
Okay.
And will it be able to impact internal protocol and policy of how Caltrans processes these projects, and in particular cultural resources issues and tribal cultural resources issues? Because I know you all have internal protocol that you follow, and I think that's a huge hurdle for tribes when they're entering into consultations with Caltrans, is one, understanding what that is, and then two, where did it come from? What kind of input was involved in putting it together? And how can it be brought up to date and have the tribes, tribal government pieces incorporated into that?
Sure. So first of all, the listening sessions that I announced are simply for the California Transportation Plan and FHWA's I just wanted to make that clarification. Good. So I wouldn't call them listening sessions in the formal sense. I would call it more like a listening tour, because I really want to receive feedback from the tribal community. We're also weighing how best to have group discussions with tribes. Once I've had a chance to talk to a lot of tribes and find a way to bring tribes together to have more focused conversations about various issues. So this is a long-term goal, I guess I should say. And it's not going to happen overnight, but absolutely the input that we receive is going toward how we will be shaping our policy in the future.
Okay, I think you should say that, because tribes aren't going to, we're pulled in 50 million different directions.
Yeah.
And we do know that Caltrans protocol is of concern for many of us, but we're not going to engage in discussions or put time into things unless we're seeing that some deliverables can come out of this that are actually changes and actually beneficial for everybody involved. So you should probably contextualize that and give some background into why you're doing this and what you're seeking. And just please know that, you're not just going to get information because you ask for information. There's got to be a give and take here.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or commissioners? I do have a public speaker that filled out for item 5, Jason Kemp.
Thank you.
Thank you, commissioners. Thank you, Chairman Ramos. Thank you, Sarah. I don't think anybody doubts the sincerity that Sarah herself has, but I think that when you're dealing with other agencies and stuff, especially that may control your actions, you're not able to follow through with some of those things. But I wish you the best. I wish us the best. So I'm Jason Kemp, a member of the United Auburn Indian Community Tribal Council. I want to address the presentation of Sarah Allred from Caltrans in collaboration with tribes. In recent years, there have been a number of Caltrans projects that have impacted cultural resources related to our tribe, including the disruption of burial sites on our ancestors. Inevitably, these disruptions have brought about the now familiar disputes over how to respectfully remove remains and to find burial areas, and who decides whether an object is an associated grave good. But the biggest issue still is whether or how much data recovery that remains the burial goods will be subject to. It is only the rarest cases using limited techniques that UAC would be willing to even consider this, especially under the 106 of the National Section 106 of the National Historic Preservation Act. Mouth's very dry. One reason we have the same dispute at hand, Caltrans archaeologists are tied to a 10-year agreement with the Federal Highway Administration to administer Section 106 for projects to receive federal funding. This agreement signed 4 years ago still has an emphasis on old-school archaeological studies, methods for mitigating adverse effects on Indian cemeteries and burial sites. That forces Caltrans to interpret damage as a lost opportunity to excavate, study or store Native American cultural artifacts, including human remains and associated burial items. Under this agreement, adverse effects on a site can only be mitigated if they dig up and remove everything in the lab, put in a lab or a museum before construction begins. However, 2 years after this agreement was signed, the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation issued the new advice on other options on how to satisfy Section 106. The ACHP said human remains associated funerary objects and sites where they are found possess values beyond their importance as resources and sources of information about the past. I added resources there, I'm sorry. Such sites, they said, possess a value to living groups that extends beyond the interest of archaeological research. New ACHP policy was published in the Federal Register November 2016, stating that the federal agencies and, by extension, Caltrans, can and should satisfy the requirements of Section 106 through means other than traditional archaeological excavation, study, and storage. The public benefit of such old-school measures is said to be minimal. The ACHP has denied alternative mitigation measures, including permanent protection of similar sites, preservation endowments, and history studies. Oh, excuse me, identified, not denied. alternative mitigation measures. Consistent with this policy, UAC is requesting that Caltrans either initiate amendments to its Federal Highway Administration Agreement or direct its project staff to deal disrupted according to the wishes of the most likely descendants. Deal with disrupted burial sites according to the MLD's wishes, which is not always, in our case, us, but today it is. So we've asked that, we're consistent with California law, the MLD has the right to determine whether an item recovered from a Native American sanctified cemetery, place of worship, religious or ceremonial site, sacred shrine, or an associated grave good or sacred object. We also have asked that the MLD have the right to make the choice as whether it and the human remains within it should be treated as archaeological specimens or reburied with dignity and respect. We have asked that the Native American human remains, associated grave goods, and objects and object cultural patrimony will not be required to be studied or stored, but will be disposed of and properly treated according to the preferred treatment alternatives of the MLD. We've asked that when evaluating whether Caltrans construction projects will have an adverse effect on Native American sites, Caltrans will not use invasive or destructive methods and techniques, such as using forensic, but to rather use something more like forensic canines and ground-penetrating radar. Excuse me, my mouth is just not working today. Finally, we have asked that the information provided by the tribes to the Caltrans or characters and location of its sites during consultation will be withheld from disclosure to other consulting parties as well as the public. If Caltrans agrees to these provisions, we can avoid having these same disputes over and over. So now that would be real collaboration. Thank you.
So. Thank you for your comments.
Did you guys, okay, questions? So any questions?
Any questions?
Do I need to clarify anything I said? Because I was kind of mumbling and... I was looking for Mr. Pagling to say 3 minutes, 30 seconds, or, you know.
Pagling's not, yeah, if he was here, he probably would have. But thank you for your comments. Next speaker I have is Brian Guth.
Thank you, Chairman, Commissioners.
And you said expected length 3 minutes, so we'll try to hold you to that.
I'll try to be quicker than that. I guess that was a hard presentation for some of us to sit through. We've been involved in some projects, as Mr. Camp mentioned, where we've had a very different experience with Caltrans. One of them in particular, recently, I heard a line, we encourage tribes to consider alternative creative forms of mitigation. Our experience was that we recommended those, and it was very strongly rebuffed. And so it has not been our experience that there's a spirit of collaboration, quite the opposite, that some of these old school mentalities are still very strong, makes it very hard to do what we think is respectful and appropriate for the people impacted by those projects. But not to rehash what Mr. Camp said, I did have two other points that I wanted to mention in the spirit of collaboration. Caltrans in the past created a document that has been used by many other agencies to drive down the rates at which they pay tribal monitors for monitoring work. And so if we're talking about collaboration and respecting the ancestors and compensating the dedicated tribal monitors who are out there trying to do this good work, I think that would be a great place to start, because unfortunately they have a reputation of not paying appropriate wages and of having their joint projects being used to drive down the payments in other local agencies. So that's one area where we've had challenges. The other one is that, unfortunately, again, in some counties where there's a joint relationship for projects, they've used their influence to encourage counties to pass policies that are not very friendly to tribes. So in El Dorado County recently, their Board of Supervisors passed a policy that was intended to limit payments or reimbursements to tribes for various types of services that they might provide that are similar to what environmental consultants provide. So, for example, you do record search or something like that. Some tribes have their own databases, and they might ask to be compensated if they run a search to their own database. Well, the Board of Supervisors approved a policy based primarily on Caltrans's advice that eliminated that as even a possibility. So I think we do want to work with all the agencies that are out there, and we have tried very hard to build those relationships and to find ways to improve them. But we just don't want you to leave with the perception that things are good as they stand. As Commissioner Miranda pointed out, there's still a lot of work to be done to achieve some of those lofty goals that Ms. Allred was discussing.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. And we will work to get some of those dates up that Caltrans was talking about as far as the sessions that are there, so we could get the input from the Indian community.
Right.
All right. Thank you for your comments, and very needed during this time, especially if there's workability that's going to be moving forward. Then let's make sure we're addressing all the issues that are important to everyone. So thank you for that. Any other speakers on item 5? Any other questions, comments from commissioners? Hearing none. Moving on to item 6.
Okay, the Native American Day report. So Native American Day will take place on September 28th this year. The sponsor this year is the Northern California Tribal Chairmen's Association, and they've picked the theme, Looking Toward the Future, Tribal-State Relationships. And they have picked art by Lynn Risling, and the official Save the Date is, I believe it's up digitally, but I don't know that we've sent it out yet. Okay, the Save the Date is out. The legislative sponsors this year are Senator McGuire and Assemblymember Wood, and we're working with Assemblymember Gloria to have a floor acknowledgement again this year. Samantha Seipert from the Native American Heritage Commission has been working in partnership with Anicita Augustinas, who was here earlier, but I believe she left from Water Resources, to take the lead on coordination efforts, and they're doing an excellent job. Do you have anything more you want to say? Okay, great.
Take nominations.
On all of them or just a slate or what?
You can do it as you wish.
All right. Well, we'll try it. Is there a motion for a slate of officers?
I will say
continue
in my position.
Yeah. All right. I wish you continue in mine.
I wish to continue in mine.
Motion to keep the officers as in the same positions, and there's been a second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. That concludes. Congratulations to everyone. Moving on to public comment. Do we have any slips?
Yes.
All right. Is there any other slips? Anyone else wishing to address the commission? All right, this time, Morningstar?
Yes.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Morningstar Galley. I am Ajumari Band of Pitt River. I worked as the Tribal Historic Preservation Officer for Pitt River Tribe between 2012 and 2016. Just personally, I'm not representing my tribe, but personally, in respect to United Auburn Indian Community, it's very disheartening to hear the comments that were made today as in relation to the UC repatriation concerns and issues. I was active in one of my first, as the acting TIPO, when I worked for my tribe, we had a repatriation effort with UC Davis, which took much longer than it should. I do not consider that to be a success story. I do not think we could ever consider it a success story when it takes 60 years to repatriate your relatives back to your home. And those were Ajumali relatives. United Auburn is at the forefront with a fully staffed cultural heritage department, and I was working at the time as a one-person department, and so I just wanted to offer that in support of them. I am here today on behalf of Sacred Places Institute. Sacred Places Institute for Indigenous Peoples is a California Indian led grassroots organization dedicated to building the capacity of Native nations and Indigenous peoples to protect sacred lands, waters, and cultures. We're here today concerned about the lack of communication with the 150 plus Native nations in California and around the Global Climate Action Summit scheduled for this September in San Francisco, which is set for September 12th to the 14th of 2018. If tribes would like to be involved, what is the process for them to do so? Will tribes be invited to attend, participate, highlight their concerns related to climate change? Additionally, we would like an update on the Climate Change Heritage Site event and associated network launch that is scheduled to take place in conjunction with the Climate Summit, which is led by the California SHPO, Julie Polanco. We believe that all California Native Nations should be invited to participate in the event and network launch, and are very concerned that the State Historic Preservation Office would exclude California Native Nations from this event. How can we trust that the SHPO is not leading the coordination of this event and is also dedicated to protecting Native American cultural and historic resources if the office engages in an exclusionary process and practices around issues as significant as climate change and cultural heritage? Given these concerns, we respectfully request that the NAHC, via the tribal advisor and the governor, explore these issues and provide an update at the next NAHC meeting or in writing to all tribes that are on the contact list of the next meeting, if that will take place after the summit. I also would like to mention that Sacred Places Institute hosted a two-day summit for California Coastal Native Nations in partnership with the State Lands Commission and the West Coast Tribal Caucus last week. Several state agencies participated, including the Native American Heritage Commission. Thank you to Sam Seibert, the Associate Government Program Analyst, for participating. And on day two, Sacred Places Institute committed to finding out more information about the Climate Summit and the Climate Cultural Heritage Event and Network and reporting back to California Coastal Conference attendees. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Any questions, comments from commissioners? Thank you. That concludes public comment. At this time, we are adjourned.